Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
This is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on another really nice, it is a late spring, feels like early summer kind of day. Temperatures in the 80s, a gorgeous day. So hope everybody doing well. Bill here in the studio. Dan is on his way. Drew is at the controls. And we've got it until 6 o'clock here with The Drive on this Tuesday afternoon. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, let's see. We talked a little bit about, just as we came on the air yesterday, Auburn was adding a transfer addition to football. Last night, they add a commitment to the class of 25 as far as football is concerned. And let's see, on the basketball side, one of the visitors for this week is definitely confirmed. Jordan Ivy Curry going to be visiting on Thursday. And then we're still expecting to see the Samford power forward. And again, we're going to go with Dan's pronunciation guide from the Samford basketball program this past year. A chore. He's being talked about on most shows in the state, and I think there's a different pronunciation on every show. So our pronunciation will remain a chore. Auburn hoping to get him in, and I believe the plan was to try to get him in tomorrow. So we've got those things we can talk about. Auburn baseball tonight. It was going to be a late afternoon game, a 6 o'clock Eastern start, but that has been moved to 7 o'clock Eastern, so 6 o'clock our time, and that means you can listen to it over on our sister station, Wings 94.3, and that will start at 5:45 here this afternoon. So got Auburn baseball as the Tigers coming off that impressive come from behind, roller coaster come from behind win over Ole Miss on Sunday. Golf, the Auburn women's golf team really playing well, and they have they've opened up a pretty big lead in the regional here at the AU club. I'm looking for the. Let's see. I got sent a note that Auburn had a comfortable lead, but when I click on it on the Auburn side, it's still showing yesterday's scores, which Auburn went in leading by one stroke. Excuse me, by three strokes. Let's check. Here we go. Auburn. Yeah. Now today, Auburn with a 287 for a two-day total of 577. That is one over par, and that is a 14-stroke lead over Houston. As Auburn in great shape to advance here from the regional. They've got quite a not that they are going to mess around. One more day to go, but they've got 34 strokes that they have to mess with, but they're really taking care of business out at the AU club. So that is the latest from that. We'd love to hear from you. Anything that you want to talk about sports-wise. Mentioned the two pickups in football yesterday. I noticed one other thing as I was going to update my depth chart, because I have not printed my updated depth chart. My printer at the house, I'll be honest with you, the printer that I have at the house has pretty much died, and it's not worth spending the money on ink to try to get it to print. So I will print this again sometime. So I've got an awful lot of scratch throughs and markouts and things like that. But I decided to just go to the Auburn website, to the Auburn University Athletics website, and just double check and make sure I had heights, weights, and classifications right on some players. And I noticed one player. Well, I realized there's one player that wasn't on that wasn't showing on the roster anymore, and that's Sean Jackson, the running back. I thought, well, maybe he wasn't. Maybe his number had changed. But when you look at it alphabetically, he's not showing on the roster. So don't know if there's if Sean Jackson has moved on, given up football or whatever, but I did not see him on the roster. So with the addition of Ronan Chambers, the Akron transfer yesterday, who's a 6'6", 290-pounder, played tackle for Akron for the past 4 years and will have 1 year of eligibility left. Those are the latest changes that I have on the roster, and I believe that I have Auburn with 78 players on scholarship. So they still have a few spots. Going to be interesting to see. There's been some more talk about Khalil Jacobs, the linebacker from South Alabama who visited Auburn last week, had planned on visiting Alabama this past weekend, and then changed that to this coming weekend. Has also talked about visiting Ole Miss. The thought was that Alabama would be tough to beat since his coach the past couple of years at South Alabama, Kane Womack, is now the defensive coordinator at Alabama. But in reading just some Alabama boards, it seems like they're getting a little tight on the numbers that they have left to offer, and linebacker is not a position where they're really looking for someone else. They may take him if they have room. But, I mean, I think Auburn may be in better shape than some folks had thought. Before he visited Auburn, the feeling was, well, he'll just take it'll just be a pass-through at Auburn, then head to Tuscaloosa. But he had a great time at Auburn and said he was just blown away by his visit. And that, I think, coupled with the fact that Alabama may be sort of slow playing him, trying to determine exactly what they have, probably bodes well for Auburn. So we'll see. It may be another week before he makes a decision on that. And then I don't really know where Auburn might be looking if they're looking for another defensive back. You know, we talked about Javion Cole from San Jose State, but he committed to Oklahoma over the weekend. And I'm sure Auburn has some other possibilities there at defensive back, but I'm not sure of anyone who looks like a serious candidate right now. So we'll just have to wait and see. The Auburn football roster getting closer to being done. Again, I mean, we'll just have to check every once in a while and make sure that everyone we thought was on the roster is still there with the apparent departure of Sean Jackson. Auburn's still in great shape at running back. Quite frankly, it was a little bit of a surprise that a running back did not enter the portal. I think a great job by Auburn of hanging on to all their running backs with Jarquez Hunter, Damari Alston, Brian Battee, and Jeremiah Cobb. You remember Brian Battee announced he was entering the portal and then came back, and there was some thought that he might re-enter the portal. He has not. Now, I guess there are some players. Well, I think players, even the grad transfers, had to be in the portal to be eligible to play this fall by April 30th. So it appears unless some players just decide that they're done, that Auburn's roster is pretty well set. Like I said, I believe 77 or 78 players on scholarship for Auburn football. Basketball-wise, I mentioned the situations that Auburn has. I mean, you would think that the guard position where Jordan Ivey Curry is now coming in on Thursday would be more pressing than forward. But if they can get a guy who can come in and not just be Chaney Johnson's backup, but compete for and if he's good enough, win the starting job at the four, I think that's nothing but good news for Auburn basketball as well. Let's see, a couple of a programming note for you. Andy Burcham, usually with us on Tuesdays, is over in Atlanta, where Auburn and Georgia Tech will be playing at 6 o'clock this evening. So he could have been on for a segment or so today, but he's going to be on Friday. So Andy will join Dan and Don on Friday because I will be out on Friday. We're headed over it's not really, but I can tell my wife it is. It's like an early Mother's Day present. Now we're going to go see Heart and Cheap Trick over in Atlanta on Friday night. So that's part of our summer tour. It's mostly going to be Atlanta. As a matter of fact, I believe it's all Atlanta. It's just different venues in Atlanta. We've got concerts in we've got one in May, one in June, one in July, one in August, and two in October. So and I believe all those are going to be in Atlanta. So we may have to see if we can find some music at other places as well. All right, we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan will be in momentarily. I want to remind you, we'd love for you to join in, and you can do so by calling the Drive hotline, which is sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390. You can also text us on the Drive text box, and it is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, who also sponsor the podcasts of the Drive. The text box number, 334-564-1840. We'll get to our first break here of the Tuesday show. Come on in and join us here on The Drive.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star backyard is the place to make lasting memories.
As he was he was making a stop for us on the way in. We appreciate
as Rob Thomas sings at the beginning of the Santana song, Bill, man, it's a hot one, right? Like this.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
Yeah. So I thought I'd stop along the way, made sure Bill was there to bring in the show, so Drew didn't have to do the first segment by himself.
Yeah, we're waiting for that, though.
One day it's going to happen. But in the meantime, yeah, we are firmly in the. How about this? Pre-retirement, what was post-finals week like for you? Like this was one of your quieter.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The time, the 2 weeks or so between the end of finals and the start of the summer semester. Yeah, pretty laid back.
Now is that consistent around campus? Is that true for a lot of folks who work with the university?
Are supposed to be there. You know, you're supposed to work. Yeah, I mean, because it's not vacation time.
It's not vacation
time. You have to use vacation time if you're not there in the office or lose.
Is that also true of folks who are going to be teaching classes in a couple of weeks? They need to be.
No, I don't think so.
Or is this a popular time to take vacations?
Oh yes, this is a very popular time to take off. So
okay, so that's you know, and you've got all of the students who just left town after graduation.
Oh yeah,
ceremonies
traffic
and everything
is much lighter now.
Yeah, you can tell this is a and what's the story with the local schools? Are they finishing up?
Soon, but I mean it's still
we're almost done
a few weeks.
Almost done with the school year for everybody else, mm-hmm. but it's a quieter time around Auburn. Looking at, you know, baseball season still going on and movement in the portal with both football and men's basketball, mm-hmm. Bringing players to campus and trying to recruit during this time period. But no, it's a nice time at Auburn. Less hectic than it
less
is.
Less stressful.
Yeah, a little bit than it is when the students are all around.
All right, let's get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Terry gets us started. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Dan. How are y'all today?
Doing all right, Terry. Good to hear from you.
Good to talk to you as well. I hate to hear that about Sean Jackson. Didn't he earn a scholarship or something last
year,
Bill?
Yeah, he was put on scholarship a year ago. He's been an outstanding player on special teams. But, I mean, when you're looking up and you're number five on the depth chart, I mean, it's tough to expect you're going to get a lot of snaps.
Yeah, I feel like he was somewhat misused in the offense to a degree. Now, they certainly know more than I do. But being his size, everything, he was like a 6-7 yard and end guy, and could keep punching at a defense and make them tired. And I just felt like he never got that opportunity, or maybe for a first down, maybe a third and short or something like that, and just keep plugging away. I don't know. He just seemed like that kind of back.
You're never going to be able to keep everybody happy if you have five running backs who could be on the field. Like there's always going to be questions about what you could be doing instead. No offense really utilizes five running backs, in any sort of consistent way. You know, usually it skews towards the top two or top three guys, and that's probably what was going to happen this year too, depending on who those top guys are. But it was unlikely, barring probably a couple of injuries, that Sean Jackson. By the way, I haven't heard this news. What's going on, Bill, with Sean Jackson?
No, I mean, I was just talking about updating the roster, and I looked at the Auburn website, and he's not on the roster.
Oh, okay. I had not.
And I thought, well, maybe he changed numbers, so I pulled it up alphabetically, and he's not on the roster.
So Sean Jackson no longer listed on the Auburn roster right. As of earlier today. Interesting. So if Sean Jackson has moved on or declared for the portal or whatever would be the case if he's not on the team anymore, you know, it was.
He might be close to graduating.
Was getting some special teams playing time last year, but as a running back, it probably seemed like it was going to be a difficult path to playing time for that young man.
Well, I guess the way college football is nowadays, it's going to be hard to build depth anywhere. Not just a roommate.
Oh, yeah, and keep it. You're right. You might feel like, you've got depth, but good luck hanging on to it.
Right. Because the guy may be a third team somewhere, maybe first team somewhere else, just like the kid that Albert thought they had him locked up, and he went to Oklahoma.
Yeah. Well, and then, and then Tulane's got to be wondering about the offensive lineman that Auburn just added, who was a three-year starter at Akron. Committed to Tulane, and he's coming to Auburn with no guarantees of a starting job.
Right, and I heard somebody mention depth, and I went, that's an ugly word in today's game. Let's be honest, because players don't hang around, and it's going to be even
no, but it's a great word if you have it.
Yeah,
if you have it exactly.
Yeah,
basketball is going to be pretty much a non-entity, I think.
What do you mean?
You guys are too eager to move on because they could be starters somewhere else.
Oh, in a lot of places, yeah. I mean, that's why it's really amazing the situation that Bruce Pearl and Auburn have right now with so many players coming back.
I thought I would never live to see the day that a guy chose Alabama over North Carolina, and the guy did.
Yeah, well, I mean, Alabama's a hot program right now.
Yeah, Nate Oates has done, I don't know, Nate Oates has done a phenomenal job. To say nothing about, I mean, obviously Bruce Pearl has done, I remember what was here before Bruce Pearl. And, Bruce Pearl has done as good a job as any coach in college basketball at their current school. Having said that, Nate Oates has also done a lot of winning since arriving in Alabama, going to the Final Four this year on top of winning multiple championships as in the regular season as Alabama coach. And he takes maybe the best team. Look, Bill, I want to be careful about this. One of the best, a team that looks like if Sears comes back,
it will be the most impressive roster in the SEC.
How many times has Alabama been the consistent preseason favorite to win the league?
Not many.
Yeah, I mean,
not many. It's happened, but it's
and there's probably never and there's probably never been a year that Auburn and Alabama were 1-2 in some capacity.
You're right about that
in the preseason, and that's probably where we are with both teams. And in the case of Holloway and Filon. Like what's even more incredible about the roster Nate Oates has assembled is that he's assembled a team that can win right now, and Holloway and Filon might not be in the top eight, top nine options
that's right.
of that team. And if he can get them to buy in on biding their time for a year, then maybe he's got a bridge beyond that.
I'll believe that when I see it.
But even if he gets nothing from them this season. Like even if Holloway and Filon
kept them from being somewhere else,
if they don't contribute at all this year and move on somewhere, he's still got a team. The team he's got ahead of those guys with who he's bringing back, who he's gone out and gotten, Omiyuri from Rutgers, the latest addition. Like it's very impressive.
And you know what that means if Alabama's won Auburn's team? You know what that means? Kentucky's just gonna blow everybody's doors off.
It's gonna be interesting because right now, I mean, Mark Pope's. Doing a different, he's approaching it differently than we've seen it at Kentucky in a long, long time.
Although I like the approach Pope is taking with the veteran options. You know, he's really leaning on. I mean, they're going to have Kentucky's going to have as many fifth year guys as Auburn which is
they are, but there are a lot of the guys are known more for their defense than they are offense. That's just Kentucky fans expect to see stars. They want to be blinded by the stars
and they don't
that
have,
are out there,
and they don't have an overwhelming scorer yet.
Right.
You know, in the group that they've added, there are still some guys in the portal that could make some noise. There are still some options, but it's an old team. You know, a lot of 5th-year seniors, 21-year-old freshmen coming back from an LDS mission. It's going to be a different group, and like Bill said, really defensive oriented for Kentucky, which is they're still Kentucky, but it's going to be a very different look than what Calipari was doing. You know, I mean, teams can. I mean, the name on the jersey matters, but teams take the identity of the coach. And Mark Pope and John Calipari do things very, very differently. And I think that if you're looking at what Kentucky has been the last couple of years, you might look at what Calipari is going to try to do at Arkansas, right? He's already landed Thiero from Kentucky.
Hey,
yeah, he's following. Well, no, that's Tennessee. And then the Tennessee big man is Adu going to Kentucky, and then the big man from Kentucky, the former 5-star, is
going to
do
to
it.
Arkansas.
They're both going to Arkansas,
right?
The big man from Tennessee and the big man from Kentucky both following John Calipari to Arkansas. He's made some moves in the portal as well. So John L. Davis is an excellent pickup, the guard from FAU. So no, it'll be competitive, but we are probably looking at a year where, at the moment, Alabama and Auburn look like, in some order, the top two teams in the league.
Right. Appreciate it, guys. You have a great day.
Appreciate the call, Terry. 334-321-1390. And Marcus is up next. Hey, Marcus.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Pretty good.
Hey, quick question. Bill, what's the latest update on the linebacker from South Alabama? Does he still anticipate going to Missouri and Alabama for a visit? And if so, do you think he's still a strong possibility for Auburn? And the last thing is, do you know of anybody else in the secondary we may still be looking at from the portal transfer?
All right. I do not yet know anybody.
I got to correct you, Marcus. The linebacker is from Niceville.
Wow, but he's from South Alabama.
That's right.
He's from the University of South Alabama.
Niceville, Florida.
Yeah. Khalil Jacobs, yes, is planning on visiting Alabama this week. And although I had a couple of people tell me that Alabama may be sort of slow playing him, not really sure if they have room for another linebacker right now while they pursue some players at other positions as well. So that may be good news for Auburn. Missouri is a team to watch out for. I mean, Eli and company have done a darn good job in the portal and recruiting and with players returning. So I wouldn't count them out, but I think Auburn feels pretty good about their situation with Khalil Jacobs. As far as a defensive back, once Javion Cole committed to Oklahoma, I haven't heard or seen of another defensive back. I'm sure there's somebody out there because I really do feel like they would like to have another experienced guy there at corner, but I don't know who that would be right now.
They're thin with proven guys in the aftermath of Colton leaving.
Yes.
You could question whether or not Colton was proven either, but he was having a very strong spring.
Mm-hmm.
Now Auburn, you look at corner, you can include nickel for the sake of argument here. Like at pure corner, Auburn's got you've got Keontae, you've got Kayan Lee. I think Champ Anthony would be the next man up if something happened to one of those two, even though he's probably your starting nickel now. I think Auburn would try to make do with, you know, who I've heard people say is Terrence Love. You know, watch out for, even though it was a quieter spring.
Tyler Scott, who entered the portal for a day.
Tyler Scott as well.
That was a big return.
You know, there are multiple. I mean, it seems like between safety and nickel, they're going to get Terrence Love on the field somewhere mm-hmm. after that, as much as we saw him last year. And then
we did hear, you know, a lot of talk about Antonio Kite and J.C. Hart. I mean, a couple of young guys.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Bill. They played Wooden some at the nickel last year too, right? To get when Keon,
yeah, but I think he
they'd
I
rather
think,
play him at safety.
I think he's better suited to be a safety.
It was more of an emergency, maybe.
The cover. I mean, you've really got to be a good cover guy now to play that slot corner slash nickel.
Watch the best receivers in the league and be like, yeah, you gotta figure out a way to cover them because a lot of them are coming mm-hmm. out of the slot. More and more, but yeah, I think Auburn would like to add another option at defensive back, even if it's more of an insurance option than a guy who steps in and becomes a starter immediately.
Have you guys discussed the early Vegas lines that came out? I was kind of shocked at some of the numbers with the Auburn. I mean, the five games were underdog. Obviously, you know, Georgia's better than us, but I don't think they're 24 points better. Alabama was 15 points. And the two that kind of surprised me were the two at home, A&M and both Oklahoma, both being a three-point pick over Auburn at home. And I'm not sure that either one of those teams are really proven yet. A&M's had a lot of kids leave. Oklahoma's replacing their entire offensive line and a new quarterback. So I think we're going to be a little bit better than what Vegas seems to think we're going to be. I don't know what your guys' opinion are, if you've even discussed that. But they don't have a lot of love for Auburn in Vegas as of right now.
Well, I mean, the first thing you look at is Auburn hadn't had a winning season in 4 years.
Yeah, 7-5 would be an improvement over what Auburn did last year. You know, even with Auburn, you know, I understand what you're saying,
and those things can change pretty quickly. But I mean, they have to see something on the field to prove it to them.
To me, Oklahoma and A&M being 3-point favorites at Jordan-Hare wasn't as surprising as to the lines that you cited. I was talking about them with Doug yesterday on the Max Roundtable. Tuscaloosa and Georgia are a different sort of situation. Pretty much everyone in college football will be a double-digit underdog going to either of those places. Even genuine playoff contenders, I think, even though Texas won in Tuscaloosa last year, I think even the best teams in college football will be sizable underdogs trying to win in Athens or in Tuscaloosa. Those two games are a separate sort of thing. The three swing games on the Auburn schedule, the three games that sort of decide, are you a 7-5 team that doesn't know how much momentum you have with Hugh Freeze, or are you a 10-2 team that's maybe in the college football playoff, having expanded it to 12 teams? Those are the Missouri, A&M, and Oklahoma games. Missouri is the one to me, at Missouri, where I think right now Auburn's a 10-point underdog. If you want to wager on that game,
well, I mean, like I said a couple minutes ago, though, I mean, look at all the players that Eli's got coming back. I mean, they've got some momentum now, and they've really taken advantage, both recruiting and in the transfer portal.
And by coincidence, I think all three of those teams play each other too: Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M. So you'll get to know not just how Auburn fares against those teams. I think Missouri. The concern would be if Missouri's schedule is going to get a lot tougher with the dissolution of the SEC East, right? If suddenly Missouri's got some teams on the schedule that they weren't playing every year that could give them some trouble, like Auburn, like Oklahoma, like Texas A&M. We'll see. I believe Alabama is on the Missouri schedule this year as well. So, I mean, those are the three games: Oklahoma, A&M, Missouri. All three of them feel like coin flips, or something like that to me. Let me ask you, Bill, because we played this game on the Observer podcast, of home against Oklahoma, home against Texas A&M, and at Missouri. Does one of those feel a lot tougher than the other two for Auburn going into this upcoming season?
Right now, this is crazy. Right now, I think Missouri seems, I mean, if you're just saying, I'm not worried about lines, just which one is the toughest? I think anytime you're on the road.
Well, the lines would tell you
you're on the road against a pretty good Missouri team.
The lines would tell you that's the toughest. The lines would tell you that's the toughest game too. Yeah. I mean, Auburn is a bigger underdog in that game than they are in the two home games. But still, those feel like the games that sort of make or break. Without punting on Alabama and Georgia, those are the three games that really make or break what kind of season you have in year two. Good stuff, Marcus.
Anything else, Marcus?
Just Kentucky, I think that's going to be a critical game. Also,
I agree.
You're right. Good, I always sort of overlook. You know, in Lexington, it's an SEC road game too, and if Auburn isn't sharp, they could very well lose to. And Kentucky, to me, because we don't know anything about Brock Vandegrift as a college football player, right? We know about him as a recruit.
Sure.
We know about sort of what people said about him at practice at Georgia, but if he's a superstar, that sort of changes the complexion of what Kentucky can be this year, because I don't know if they've had. I mean, Will Levis was very good, and is looking like he's going to be a franchise quarterback in the NFL for the time being. But I don't know if the last time Kentucky's had like a superstar playing quarterback or somebody that could really elevate the
If he's a superstar, it really tells you. I mean, how unbelievably talented Georgia's roster's been.
Yeah,
he's been there for 3 years now, and barely has gotten on the field.
If we get good play at quarterback and get better play than people expect in the defensive line, I think we can be a 9-3 team, which would be fantastic.
I don't argue with that. I think Auburn's got an excellent shot of winning at least 8 regular season games.
I think
at least 8.
I would say anything worse, it would be tough to sell optimism at 7-5.
It would depend on how the 7-5 worked out.
Because seven and five,
I think, would be your bottom.
That's the base.
I think 7-5 is difficult to. I would say anything worse than 8-4 is going to be just because.
No,
I think it's 7-5.
Selling it to some fans, but I mean, realistically, again, Auburn hasn't had a winning season in 4 years. To all of a sudden expect you're going to win 9.
Oh no! Nine or eight would be one, but I think if you go 7-5, it's fair to wonder how much better you were than last year as an actual team, right? Because last year's team is what, 7-6? Did they win the bowl game? Right, like so. I mean, last year's team is 8-5 if they beat New Mexico State and Maryland. So if you go 7-5 this year with this schedule, I do think it's fair to wonder, you know, how much better are you getting with Hugh Freeze? If you go 9-3 or 10-2. You know, even though you're probably,
I think if you go 8-4, you're definitely improved.
Oh, for sure. I mean, 8-4 would be 8-4 would mean that you beat a pretty good team. I mean, I believe it's still true. I could have the stat wrong, Bill. I believe the last time Auburn beat a team that finished with a winning record, I believe the last time Auburn beat a major conference team that finished with a winning record, it was when Bo Nix beat Ole Miss on Halloween back in 2021.
That's probably right.
Like the last time, I mean,
that's
so
right.
So 8-4 would mean you probably beat a team that finished with a winning record, because the five teams we were just talking about. Look, maybe Oklahoma or A&M is 6-7. Maybe there's also Kentucky. There's also Cal, who I wouldn't forget either as a team. Not necessarily as a team, although I think the preseason projections have Cal and Auburn pretty close to even in some of the some of the advanced stat things. So that game could be a little bit tricky, but it's I think that if you go 8-4 or better, you probably beat a pretty good team. You could go 7-5 without an impressive win, right? Like you look at the schedule.
Yeah,
I mean,
you could
go 7-5 mm-hmm. without a win over a team that moves the needle, especially if Oklahoma, A&M, or Missouri cratered this year. Like if they had a losing season, you know, that would be on the table. So I would say, you know, the hope should be that Auburn goes 8-4 or better, with the outside shot that you do a lot better than 8-4.
Well, hopefully it will be the Missouri of last year, because they came out of nowhere.
They
and I
sure
really
did.
Feel like we have some pieces in place. If we stay healthy and things go well with quarterback, we could surprise the people and have a 9-win, and we got extremely lucky, maybe a 10-win season. But I think the trajectory is upward. Hugh's doing a good job. We're getting better players, and that's the key to having a good football team.
I'll tell you what it is. If you're 5-0 after Oklahoma,
oh,
if you're 5-0 with five straight home games to start the year, if you're 5-0 after Oklahoma,
going to Athens,
you're feeling good. If you're 3-2 after Oklahoma,
no, you're,
because
you
because
you're
because
worried.
because you slipped up against Cal or Arkansas and then got beat by Oklahoma in Auburn, if you're 3-2 going to Athens, it's a turbulent flight the rest of that season.
Well, we're going to cross our fingers and hope for good stuff. Appreciate your show, guys. Thank
good you. Hearing from you, Marcus. 334-321-1390. Again, Andy Burcham going to be joining the show on Friday.
Looking forward to talking to Andy. He's in Atlanta right now.
That's right.
With
Auburn and Tech will play at 6 tonight. There's some confusion on that. I mean, I believe it.
Hopefully the players and umpires all know.
Well, no, Auburn's there, that's
okay,
fine.
Okay,
they're
good.
Ready. I mean, but it had been listed some places at 6 Eastern. It is 6 Central, 7 Eastern.
It's a time zone confusion thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a 6 o'clock our time game, 5:45 airtime
right,
on Wings.
I'll tell you a time zone story. We had when Troy went to Hawaii without me like a year and a half ago. And it was a long trip. Like
Troy to Hawaii is going to be a long trip, with or without you,
well,
Dan.
They played West Coast teams and then went to Hawaii.
Right.
So it was like UCLA.
Oh, so it wasn't just a trip to Hawaii.
No. Okay. It was a trip to UCLA, a trip to San Francisco, and then a trip to Hawaii. And they were gone for upwards of 2 weeks. And while they were gone, they played a couple of games in Hawaii I believe they used the floor that used to be. BYU Hawaii used to play D1 athletics and then got rid of, I think, their entire D1. I think they just stopped. I think they went to club sports.
I did not know that there was a branch. Branch of BYU in Hawaii.
There is BYU Hawaii, and they have a gymnasium, and it's still, you know, I guess they host tournaments and things. And Troy was playing in a tournament there, and the game was listed at one time, And I get a, I'm all set up and ready to go. I thought I'd confirmed it, and I get a call about an hour before I was expecting that call, saying, "Hey, we're ready to go." Like, it's someone when they translated Hawaii time to Central time, and it was even on like the ESPN app was wrong. Like the whole thing, somebody had left an hour off, and so the game was. Everybody thought the game was starting an hour in an hour, but it was actually like ready to tip. Like they were ready for me. So luckily I was mostly ready. But it was I had just gotten home from like an Auburn game. So if we'd cut it any closer, like no way I'm broadcasting from the home setup from as the Trojans were in BYU Hawaii's gym.
All right, we'll get to our next break. Love for you to join in as we continue here on the Tuesday Drive.
6-7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 17 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon with Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Now, we mentioned that Andy rescheduling for Friday. Jake Crane will be with us today at around the bottom of hour number two.
I want to read this story just because I think Tex might hear it and get angry. Okay, so I'm going to read about the MLB memo.
Oh, I thought you were going to read something about young Sheldon.
No. Although two episodes this upcoming Thursday. But no, this Major League Baseball, this is Kylie McDaniel, ESPN.com, Major League Baseball Insider reporting. Major League Baseball has sent a warning to clubs about encouraging players subject to the Major League Baseball draft to withdraw from high school baseball to become eligible to sign as international players. So Major League Baseball and the memo, a key section of the memo basically says that Major League Baseball has learned that teams are telling players, don't play high school baseball in America, become residents of a foreign country, and then try to break into baseball as international players instead of as American players, because the international system gives every team a chance to play. There's a similar size.
Yeah, I mean, it goes into a pool. I mean,
there are similar.
Everybody can negotiate.
Everyone has a similar size bonus pool, and they're allowed to negotiate with any international player. And pretty much everyone internationally can be acquired by any team, whoever makes the best deal.
And we were talking about it during the break, and there are a couple of reasons why that wouldn't that I can see Major League Baseball saying no, this wouldn't work. Major League Baseball for 100 years.
If you got rid of the reason there's an amateur draft is what you're saying.
The reason there's an amateur draft is to try to allow the bottom teams to acquire some talent and not have to be bidding against. Now there were never salary caps. But it was similar to that back before the Major League Draft came into being, and Rick Mundy was the very first player taken in the first Major League Draft. But the way it used to happen is the Yankees would get all the players. Now, what's happened recently is the Dodgers are getting all the players in the international draft, and there are a lot of teams in Major League Baseball. There's some of the cheaper ones that wouldn't want to go big on the top players, and I could see a team like the Dodgers, or a team with a lot of money that felt pretty good about their system, about the depth that they had in their system, just saying, well, we don't care about our 10th pick or our 8th pick. We're gonna go top heavy and get the top three players in the pool. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think Major League Baseball is going to say no, because you would have to really be strict about it and say you can't go more than this for your first guy, you can't go more than that for your second. And how would you know that when you sign someone that's your number one guy? See, I mean, there're just too many. I think there're too many flaws in opening it up just like into the marketplace for everybody.
It would be the best thing financially in the short term for the top players on the board. Right, because there would be a bidding war from just if everyone is eligible to sign the first overall pick in a draft
with any team. Yes.
Yes, if everyone can negotiate with that guy and sign him, then think about what that would have done to like Paul Skeens's.
Paul Skeens would not be in the Pirates organization right now.
Paul Skeens
would be a Dodger.
Am I crazy for saying he'd be like the Yamamoto contract? Like, would like the teams? Somebody would have been somebody would have been ready to make Paul Skeens like like they would have given
absolutely
him.
Absolutely, they would have. And I mean, see, the thing is, the Pirates now have a chance. The Pirates look like they have an opportunity to be a pretty darn good team here in a couple of years, and they wouldn't have gotten they wouldn't have gotten Paul Skeens.
Right. It's a well, I mean, unless they made the top offer for Paul Skeens, which seems implausible.
Yeah.
Right. If everyone's able to negotiate with a player like that, but so baseball's hearing that that players are encouraging teams are encouraging players to leave high school baseball and establish residency. They're not really getting specific on what teams or whatever, but like,
that's what I would like to know. I would like to know what teams have been doing that.
And the other thing is they have hard cap.
I mean, looking west, young man.
Well, they have hard cap. Well, I mean, there are a lot of teams.
Well, but I mean, the team that keeps getting those guys.
Well, a lot of teams have broken some rules though lately. Let's not go crazy here. A lot of teams are breaking rules here. The Giants signed.
Yeah, but I mean, what advantage would it be for the teams that keep losing to the teams with the deepest pockets?
There was a player named Lucius Fox about a decade ago who was a shortstop who was in high school. I believe he was originally from the Bahamas, and he moved back to the Bahamas and was declared, instead of being a high school free agent or a high school draft prospect, he was declared an international draft prospect, and he was able to sign a bigger deal with San Francisco Giants. They've changed the rules since then. Now there are limits on what international free agents can offer and how much money teams can allocate in the international free agent pool in any given year. But it's still more money than that kid would have made. Like Lucius Fox wouldn't have made that kind of bonus.
Coming straight out of high school. In the draft.
And so there's, you know, it seems like a loophole that teams have discovered, and they're encouraging folks to explore that loophole in baseball, saying don't do it. And as you would say. If that became fashionable, it would be very bad for high school baseball. It would be very bad for college baseball.
If an
exodus of, and you know, with NIL, there's money opportunities for college baseball players that weren't there just a couple of years ago. But the thought of players abandoning high school football, high school baseball, or in big numbers because they want to explore. They want to improve their draft position. I think that would be I imagine it would be a select few players, you know, that we're really talking about. I can't imagine it would be a really fat, you know, we're not going to see dozens or hundreds.
No,
of
but
them.
I could see the top 10 high school prospects being encouraged to do that.
It could be the top. Yeah. I mean,
probably more than that.
Well,
I would say guys that are projected to be top 100.
Well, especially if a team's saying, hey, we're not picking it again. This might leave some blue fingerprints on this sort of thing. But like if a team say we're not going to pick early enough in the draft to select you.
Right, we can't. We won't be able to get you. Don't you want to come?
We're not allowed to trade for your draft. We're not allowed to trade for the first overall pick.
Don't you want to wear? See, that's something I can't do in our league.
Yeah, like the first the first overall, you know, if you want to do that, you know, you got to go into the pool so you can negotiate with everybody. But I saw that story and wondered if somebody had been caught.
I had not seen that. Somebody obviously has. Somebody has at least, you know, there's been some complaints, I would say, from some teams about what's going on. That's really interesting. And we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390. That'll get you through here on The Drive.
What's it mean to be a Four Seasons Fest?
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Dan, looking at this day in history, and we're talking about what...
Well, it led to a talk about
the OJ, but yeah, that's a month from now.
Today is the 29th anniversary of Reggie Miller scoring
8 points in 9 seconds, 9 points in 8 seconds, something like
or
that.
Maybe it's the 29th anniversary of another famous moment he had in the Garden. It was May 7th, 1995 was when he scored 8 points. In 9 seconds to rally the Pacers to a victory in game one of the conference semifinals. He scored 25 points in the fourth quarter of a game in the 94 conference finals, both of those at Madison Square Garden. Reggie Miller will be calling tonight's Knicks-Pacers game live on TNT on the anniversary of his triumph.
Think he might mention that, or somebody might bring that up.
I wonder how he'll be greeted, like when we get to see Reggie out there. We were looking at some other things.
I'm sure very warm.
Things that were happening during the OJ chase, including the game five of the Knicks Rockets, you know, was happening during that. The Griffey hit his 30th home run that day. I think it was the fastest anybody had ever gotten to 30 in a season. Lots of Arnold Palmer, you know, lots of noteworthy events happening on that day in history.
All right, on this day, we have another hour to go. So come on in and join us in just a couple of minutes when we're back with hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Drew here in the studio, and we'd love for you to be a part of the show as well. You can give us a call on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1890, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at the at Southeastern Industrial Contract. Did I give them? Was that wrong? Was it 1840?
It's 1840, isn't it?
I was reading the Southeastern Industrial Contractors number. Okay. Podcast of The Drive, available however you listen to podcasts, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractor. They're an Alabama-based firm, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call them, 334-209-6355. Now, The Drive text box, 334. Now I'm self-conscious. Now
it's 564-1840. Yeah.
334-564-1840.
Fortunately, somebody remembered the phone number because they're calling in.
That's a Skybar hotline. Everybody knows that one. But 334-564-1840 is the Drive text box, and that's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
So Jerry's calling in to say, hey, I was texting that other number.
Oh, no.
And somebody texted me
back. We get messages into the Drive text box. People fire away. We'll give that a read every. We've got to remember to do that more often. But we'll get to Jerry here. Shout out to Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Absolutely.
For all the help they give us.
I mentioned saw Derek a couple of weeks ago. So good.
You know what?
Him.
Shout out to Uncle Keith's Red Sauce too.
Just because. Yeah, that's right. Hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Yeah, let's get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Jerry is up first this hour. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Good show so far.
Appreciate it.
You didn't hear that last minute or so, did you?
I just wanted to talk about the Braves a little bit. They've been kind of slumping here lately. Of course, they're playing Dodgers, but.
Yeah, I mean, baseball's a game of streaks. The Braves had been playing ridiculously well. They're still trying to get all their big bats going, but I'm not overly concerned. I mean, I do wonder. Max Fried had a couple of clunker starts. Pitched well, didn't pitch so well last time out. But again, the Dodgers right now are just unbelievable, and Shohei is just. Otani is. Unbelievable. I mean, I heard some discussion a little earlier today. Should he be considered for MVP because he's just a DH? Yes.
Yeah.
He's great. I mean, going 4-for-4 against Max and hitting 200.
Yeah, he's only leading the majors in homers and batting average.
Yeah. And plus, he's not able to pitch right now.
No, and there's some people some people are wondering, should he just stick to this, or maybe be a closer or something, and not have to exert as much and spend as much into pitching? Is pitching does pitching harm his hitting some? Well, let me ask he's gone from being the best to being better as a hitter.
Is he worth the contract they're giving him just as the DH? Is he worth the guy? I think he's worth every penny.
I think
just
well,
DHing
is,
if he wants
once
to.
Once he's able to throw, they can play him in the field.
But if he wants to just
wherever he wants.
It's the way I felt about A-Rod when the defense started to become a question there with the. It's like, look, if he's producing Giambi.
If he's
like,
the best hitter in the game, the answer is yes.
And to answer your question about the MVP voting there, Edgar Martinez finished top five for the MVP a couple of times.
He's never had a DH. Win.
David Ortiz finished in the top five multiple times for the MVP award just as a DH. I think there's absolutely you can be the most valuable player in baseball without hitting or without pitching or without fielding, and Shohei can absolutely do that.
He's great. Hey, Bill, I just wanted to ask you: are you a baseball card collector?
I wasn't really a collector, although I mean I had a, and as a matter of fact, I still have
sore subject
a suitcase or two full of cards. Now, I had just had them from the time I was a kid, and my mom at least I think I've told this story before. She tossed out my comic books when I went to college, and some of my comics included. Like the original number one
Action Comics
Marvel.
Yeah.
Oof. I had Fantastic Four number one, the Avengers number one, Spider-Man. Well, I mean, I had the first of a lot of those, and Mom tossed them out, saying, you know, it was just wasting space, and she kept some good magazines like Ladies' Home Journal and Good Housekeeping or something. Years later, I said, Mom, you know, I don't think those Ladies' Home Journal. I know those Ladies' Home Journals and Good Housekeeping wouldn't have made a down payment on my house.
No one's,
but those comic books would. But anyway,
no one's dressing up as the folks on the cover of the Ladies' Home Journals.
No,
50
no,
years later,
you're right about that. Now, but the other thing is, now cards that I had, and I have a lot of them. But when we moved from our house where my two sons were raised, there had been a binder. I'd never really, you know, bought cards to save them. You know, in other words, they got a little worn. That's right. I mean, they get a little worn. I didn't just immediately put them in plastic. But I had had an autographed Mickey Mantle 1961 card. I had a Pete Rose rookie card. I had a Sandy Koufax rookie card. I mean, I had some cards worth serious jack. And I have no idea what happened to the binder that my boys put them in. I mean, not blaming them, but I didn't lose it. But yeah,
well,
I've still got some. And my younger son, there were a couple of card stores in town, 10, 15, I guess, well, actually 15 to 20 years ago. There was one at the corner of Glendine, and there was another one over right where Opelika Road widens across from Clear H2O. There were a couple of card shops. And when one of them went out of business, Matt bought, I mean, lots and lots and lots. So we have a lot of baseball cards just, you know, in a closet and in the attic.
Well, I was going to tell you a story from my experience. I grew up a big Yankees fan, and of course I was a Mickey Mantle fan.
Oh yeah, absolutely, me too. That's why I wore number 7 and tried to switch it when I was in high school.
I did too. Every time I got a chance, I wore number 7. But I had a Mickey Mantle card that I traded for a Babe Ruth commemorative card.
Well, I don't know that that's a wise. I don't know that was a wise trade there, Jerry.
No, it wasn't. But when I was 6,
I can understand.
I'll get another Mickey Mantle card. I won't ever get another Babe Ruth card. So that's the reason I did it. But,
well, my wife, bless her heart. I mean, my wife was pregnant when Mickey was at a card show in Montgomery. I was working over there in radio at 7:40, and she went and stood in line right at 9 months pregnant in the heat to get to get Mickey's autograph on that 61 card. And then now, wow. Now I have no idea where it is.
Oh, man. I wish I had it.
Yeah, so do I.
All right, guys. See you later.
Appreciate the call. All right, here. I've told this one before, too. Here's my embarrassing story of baseball cards. Because when you would just go buy packs of cards, and these were Tops pretty much for the most part back in the day, you'd get a pack of, you know, you get a pack of cards and you'd get that gum that lasted about 5 seconds. But invariably there would be like three or four cards that every time you bought a pack of cards, you'd get that card. You know, you get that player's cards. And I had extra.
They still doing it with the gum? They still doing the packs? They still doing the packs with the gum?
They still have gum in baseball card packs? I don't know. I haven't bought a pack of baseball cards in I don't know how long. But
I feel like if you get a pack with some gum in it now, it might be real.
It was like the driest.
Yeah.
It was very, you know.
That gum was dry when it was new.
It was.
Bill. And so now we're talking about it's probably been in somebody's closet for a while.
But anyway, at the card shop that was over there at Glendine, occasionally they would. I mean, they bought cards too, and they would just say, "Bring in your cards." And if I had just some cards that I had multiples of, like I swear it'd be like Choo Choo Coleman, and I mean there were a lot of Mets. When the Mets were really bad, a lot of A's when the A's were really bad. It seemed like you'd get the backup players on the bad team's cards all the time. So I got a box of cards that were all ones that I have multiples of. Took them over there, and I got around $10 or something, which I thought was a pretty good deal for them. And there was a gentleman in there who had a military uniform on, and he asked if I had any, and he named the player, and I'm blanking on his name right now. He was a backup catcher with the A's, and I realized, oh, that is him. He was an ROTC instructor.
Okay.
Here at Auburn, after he'd finished his playing days, he went in the service and was an ROTC instructor. I believe it was Army ROTC. But he asked if I had any of his cards because he saw I had some cards from that year, and I knew I did, because this guy had been a backup catcher with the A's, and he was about a 220 hitter maybe. And I was thinking, yeah, I couldn't get rid of your cards. I said, yeah, there may be one here in this box. And we started thumbing through, and sure enough, I had one of his cards, and it had a bunch of dart holes in it. I mean, you know what you used to, I mean, with extra cards, you'd use them as targets and stuff
sure,
like that.
Sure, yeah.
And I mean, I was about as embarrassed as I've been.
Well,
like,
I mean,
I told him he could definitely have it, but I mean, I found another one that didn't have hole. I mean, there were like three of his card in that box. But it's like, and he goes, you don't have to explain. I understand. He goes, I was just wondering if I could find one of my cards.
Bill, you gotta find out who that was.
I can look it up because I can see the card right now. He's in a catcher's stance, no mask. I mean he's squatting like he's calling signals about to catch the ball.
This is what he looked like on the card.
This is the card. That's what the card looked like.
Okay. Well,
and the other thing I remember about it, well,
trying to find Auburn ROTC baseball catcher A's got me very little on Google. So I'll implore you.
I've got an idea what his name was.
I guess I could look at A's rosters
Jason
from what year do you think he was on the A's?
It was probably mid-60s.
All right, we'll dig
60, 64, we'll, 5, 6,
we'll
somewhere
dig,
in
we'll
there.
Dig, we'll dig this one up.
Yeah, I'll find him. All right, I'll tell you what, we'll get to break. while we effort that. And, hey, you can get us onto whatever subject you would like. 334-321-1390. We got another segment where we're wide open before we check in with Jake Crane of Crane & Company at 5:30 here on the Tuesday Drive.
At Dixie Electric, Plumbing, and Air, your comfort.
And Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Well, welcome back into the drive. Still searching. Texas sending me names of Auburn baseball players who were ROTC guys back in the 80s. Well, they might know who the instructor and former catcher was.
I've got to see
the card. If I see that card, I'll know it was him.
I'm learning a lot about the 60s Kansas City A's going roster by roster. Rick Monday, who knew?
Yeah.
Part of one of those teams.
334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Did you ever collect? Were you much of a collector of anything back as a kid?
You know, I mean, I guess,
I was a collector of cards, but when I got baseball cards, you didn't get them as an investment. You know, they weren't thought of as an investment back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, the physical media that I had, you know, when I was younger, if you're thinking about like DVDs or VHS tapes, CDs, books, like those all, you know, grew to the point where it was a collection. I actually had a decent sized collection of DVDs that I was just thinking like it's
I always thought I had a decent collection of vinyl until I met Floyd.
Was that right?
Oh wow,
I got to see that sometime. My collection of DVDs was you know sort of collecting dust on a shelf, and I thought, you know, if I donated these or sold them, like, you know, at least somebody would get more use out of them than I'm currently getting. I flirt with the idea of like restarting a collection of music or movies or books or something, because I do wonder, you know, if some of these streaming services are, you know, a house of cards and we're gonna lose access to all this stuff someday. But no, at the moment, I'm without a collecting habit.
Yeah, well, no, I just wondered if you had.
Yeah,
had
I'd say,
one,
you know, it was
back
but
back
yeah,
as a youngster.
Probably would have been DVDs or CDs or something. You know, trying to find, you know, trying to build a decent sized library.
334-321-1390 and Tex is up next. Hey Tex.
Hey Tex.
Yeah, I ran out of names for you, Bill. I do go back to the 60s, but I don't remember the 60s. And for different reasons than other people that don't remember.
Yeah, right.
I was too young. So you started talking baseball cards. So I'll run a few past you. An original Yogi Berra rookie card signed by Yogi.
Oh, that's
original
nice.
Original Johnny Bench card signed by Johnny Bench.
I got a Johnny Bench rookie. I got a Johnny Bench rookie card, but it wasn't signed by Johnny.
Yes. Original Manny Sanguin card, rookie card signed by Manny. I've got an original Hank Aaron card, rookie card, signed by Hank Aaron. The Hank Aaron and Yogi Berra were signed in the 1982 walkout, what do you call it, strike.
Those cards for their rookie years were a little oversized, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
They were a little bit bigger than the other trading cards.
Yes.
I had a cousin that was 6 years older than me that gave me his 1955 and 56 cards. He had nearly a complete 1956 set. It was really cool.
So something I did for my son when he was born, every year I bought a full set of Topps trading cards from the time, and he was born in 1995. He has all of them unopened, but the one we caught him opening, and he got in trouble for that. He has 1 year that he opened. He has all 18 still sealed. So a 17 of the 18 sealed.
Wow.
So I never put them in spokes of a bicycle, none of those kind of things. It was.
Oh, they sounded so good in spokes of a bike, and then, you know, you do distance dart toss is what we used to do with some of them, the ones that we had so many of.
Well, and my favorite card, because I grew up a Cardinals fan. I grew up listening, coming home from school or baseball, and sitting with my dad. And
I was going to say, hold on. I mean, were you? I mean, all the other guys you've talked about were catchers, so it wasn't Simba, was it?
No.
Okay.
My favorite card of all time is a rookie Bob Gibson card that I actually got signed.
Wow.
In Fulton County Stadium. When the old joke my family used to make is pro ball back then only came to Atlanta when the Cardinals came. And so we went down by the bullpen. There's about 3,500 people in the stadium, and Bob Gibson's warming up or getting ready to warm up. And I said, I have your rookie card. Will you sign it? He said, kid, you got a pen? Yes, sir. And when I said yes, sir, he popped his head around and signed the card.
Wow. Oh, that's cool.
So – it was pretty cool. I love collecting those kind of things. And one that's kind of also close to my heart, I actually have a rookie Will Clark card, too. And I was able to get that signed.
Well, I can see that. I hope so.
Yeah. Collecting those are great. I'm running my head through all the guys that might have been at Auburn in the 60s. And considering I was in kindergarten in 65, I'm not going to be able to help you.
So, Tex, we have breaking news.
Yeah, I had to see the card because I wasn't sure of the name, but no, it was Billy Bryan. Billy Bryan is in a catcher's pose, and I definitely remember that. I remember that card, and I was very embarrassed because it had the dart holes all on it. When I looked up Billy Bryan's bio. Yeah, he's a Southern guy. He's born in Morgan, Georgia, and he passed away in 2003 in Georgia as well.
Not to be confused, Kansas City A there, Billy Bryan. Not to be confused with Billy Butler, Kansas City Royal of from the last 20 years or so. I saw Billy Butler play a couple times in high school when he was in Florida before going into the system. He hit a ball 450 easy. Tex, it was like you know what I mean, like the different sound that like a major leaguer, 18-year-old future major leaguer, it was a different sort of thing, and he was a long time pro as well.
The farthest ball I ever saw hit was in the old stadium in Columbus, and it loses Golden Park.
Yeah,
402 to dead center. Steve Balboni hit one onto Highway 80. And it bounced in the lane going west, not the lane going east.
Yeah, we used to go over there. I mean, I was a Yankees fan. We'd go over and watch Bye Bye and his bunch play.
The home run Irish hit this past weekend is probably the top one of the season for Auburn, right? I mean, the one on the
either that one or the Cade Ballou hit one that was about like that too.
Yeah.
Well, didn't Ike hit one earlier in the season that was 400 plus?
Yeah, it was listed around 450.
Yes. So I don't know what the one Saturday was. And last but not least, Bill, did you share my research on the throwing of the glove call?
No, I did not.
Okay. It is not it's not considered a violation unless it makes contact.
Yeah.
Contact with the ball.
If you throw the glove during a game in college baseball and it makes contact with the ball, it's two bases?
Correct.
Wow.
So that's quite a risk he took. I don't know how close he got, but it's a risk.
Yeah, no kidding. It would have been a whole lot worse, at least in the immediate situation, than it was.
Yeah. It would have saved a few pitches on that pitcher's arm.
That's true. And it would have saved the catcher, too, probably.
Auburn almost caught a break on the – it was the top of the ninth. The RBI, either the double or the triple by Ole Miss with the bases loaded. That one nearly went over the wall for a ground rule double that would have saved Auburn a run in that situation. It was just bounced off the very top of the wall. But instead – instead, all three runs scored on that one.
Yeah, we all have a good one. I love Jay Crane's segment, so looking forward to hearing it. You guys take care.
All right, Tex, thanks, man. 334-321-1390. So, yes, indeed. I will never forget the card. I just didn't remember the name that went with it. So, Billy Bryan, who was from Georgia, was here. I don't know if he was a full-time. He may have just been a guest, but he said he was here with ROTC when he was there at the old baseball card spot there in the Glendine Shopping Center. 334-321-1390. Let's see. I mentioned a little while ago the Auburn women's golf is really playing well. They have a 14-stroke lead over second-place Houston. North Carolina's another shot back. Oregon at plus 19. I mean, Auburn's the only one close to par. Auburn's one over par. Houston is plus 15. North Carolina plus 16. Oregon plus 19. And Georgia and Tulsa are tied at 20 over. So one more day, and Auburn should be moving on after winning their regional. The Auburn men will be playing next week down in Baton Rouge. They are the number one overall seed. And, I mean, they're just playing fantastic golf right now. All right, we've got Jake Crane of Crane & Company coming up. We'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us as we head into the final half hour here on the Tuesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest, and that, of course, Jake Crane of Crane & Company. Hey, Jake, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing fantastic, guys. As usual, it's a beautiful day here up in Nashville, and just rocking and rolling.
Yeah, I mean, it's things are still moving along. I mean, Auburn adding a player from the transfer portal, a little bit of a surprise, getting a guy who looked like he was headed for a possible starting spot at Tulane, and Ronan Chambers coming in and going to have to compete for playing time here at Auburn after a four-year career at Akron.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's one of the most underrated pickups that Auburn's gotten, and it's not as flashy as, you know, getting a wide receiver or maybe getting a big-time pass rusher, but Auburn needs bodies up front, even if he doesn't win the job, and kudos to him for wanting to come in and compete. Look, I think that just shows you, again, what it means to play at this level, what it means to play at a place like Auburn, but we both know, guys, it's not the first five you put out there. You got to have at least seven and preferably eight and maybe one more to be able to make it comfortably through an SEC football season, through a college football season in general. So having that piece, that competition that's created, you know, God forbid somebody goes down. I guarantee you Hugh Freeze slept a little bit easier that night after getting him. And look, it's a good piece. I think it's a guy that can do multiple things well, may have a future professionally. And look, Tulane, you know, you hear Tulane and you're like, oh, he must not be that great. Look, John Summerall in Tulane taking over for Willie Fritz, they've done a pretty daggum good job. And if he was going to go in there and start, Auburn can definitely use him.
And yeah, we had someone yesterday sort of lamenting, and I understand the concern. Like it's probably a bad sign for Group of Five football if a guy with a starting opportunity at a place like Tulane is leaving that to be the first man off the bench. For Auburn, but we'll see what the offensive line looks like. I mean, I think that I would think on the Auburn offensive line, the most vulnerable spot might be Jeremiah Wright, might be Too Tall Miller. The guy who could be the most easily challenged for a starting spot, and someone with the kind of experience that Chambers brings from Akron could very well find himself on the field.
Well, you know, Dan, to the first point, I get what you're saying, and I think there is some merit to it, but I think you'd be crazy to turn down a scholarship offer from Auburn in the SEC. You know, even if Tulane said, hey, you're going to come in here and start, I would get why you'd want to stay. I don't think it's too bad of a sign for Group of Five football. I think it's more of an obvious choice. If you're the type competitor that got you to that spot, you're the type competitor that thinks you can come in and win the job. Now, looking at Jeremiah or looking at Too Tall, if you're afraid somebody's going to come in and take your job, you don't need to be starting on the offensive line at a place like Auburn anyway. There's a little bit of what I call good arrogance that goes along with being a starter at this level. But at the end of the day, regardless if anybody's worried about competition, competition is something that Auburn has not had, I think, up front at a high level. I mean, you got two bad players competing over something. That's one thing. But when you're having guys that could start at the Group of Five level, which we've seen Auburn be able to bring people in that have been able to make that jump to this Power Five level, whether you got 1 year left, whether you got 2 years left. But make no mistake, the biggest winner in this, without a doubt, is Auburn in that offensive line.
And I'm not suggesting that Too Tall or Jeremiah. You know,
no, I know you're yeah, not. Like, I know you're
but
not.
they seem yeah. like the most, like, if someone's going to challenge any of the five guys that we think of
for
as
sure.
starters on the Auburn offensive line, it feels like that would be the side.
Yeah, you feel like Percy, Dillon, and Connor are guys that have it pretty well locked down. Hey, to what you were saying though, just a second ago, Jake, 18 months ago, Auburn was struggling to find two of anything to compete on the offensive line. They didn't have depth or talent.
Yeah, and look, guys. I say this all the time, and it's the truth. At the end of the day, if you want to bridge the gap in between the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Tennessees and the Ohio States and the Michigans, it is not just about going out there. And I love that Auburn has Cam Coleman. You need to have those guys, but it's up front. I would much rather have a really good offensive line and average skill players than an average offensive line and really good skill players. That's not the way this game works. That's not the most efficient way to be able to win. That's not what you want to be able to lean on. So I think it, again, goes to show you, number one, this coaching staff's ability to recruit after the transitory period, right, that we saw with Etheridge leaving and Cadillac leaving and some of these other guys going to other places. It seems like Auburn's recruiting has gotten better. But look, Hugh Freeze knows what he's doing. Like, and this wasn't something that you come in and you snap your fingers and it's okay. And look, did Auburn have the best year ever? No, you lost to New Mexico. Imagine what is going to happen when Auburn wins the way that they're going to win. It's going to be a whole heck of a lot easier, not just having that brand-new, beautiful, state-of-the-art facility, but being able to tell guys, look, Auburn's back, and when Auburn's cooking, we cook like nobody else.
I'm looking at the guys that were in their first year with the team last year, and whether it's freshmen or players who transferred in, and it feels like a lot of if Auburn's going to take a step forward from last year's team, it's going to come from a lot of those guys that were that were new to last year's team. Whether it's offensive linemen like Too Tall and Connor Liu and Dylan Wade, or I guess a tight end like Fairweather would be in this mix as well. Peyton Thorne, the obvious choice from the offensive
yeah.
side, but then on the defensive end, right? You've got players like Keldrick Falk and Jalen McLeod. You know, is there a second year player that you feel like is particularly key to Auburn making a leap in Hugh Freeze's second year?
Well, look, I'm so high on Connor Liu right now at the center position, and again, you know, the experience is the unteachable intangible, right? You can't have experience unless you experience it. But again, there's different types of experience. There's coming in year one out of high school and understanding what you have to do, not only to just go to college, but to play SEC level football in college. Your body's got to change, your schedule changes, and then you have guys that have been in college but haven't played for this coaching staff yet. That's another experience. You learn how to work with guys, new teammates, new coaches, understand really the structure and how it's changed from maybe when you were there before. But I think Connor Liu has a chance to be the best Auburn center since Reese Dismukes. I think he's nasty. I think he's smart. I think he wants to finish guys. And even as a young guy, I think he's the one, and that's how it should be at the center position, that's going to set the tone for the other guys in that room. And again, you know, Falk is going to be an NFL player. He is going to figure it out and be a menace. McLeod showed that when he could stay healthy, right, that he could be really effective. And now that Auburn has more depth at that spot, I think he can kind of empty the tank a little bit more. There's some more you can do with him. I think it'll keep him out of that training room as much as he was in there last year. So, again, you're a year older, you're a year wiser, you're a year more accustomed to the staff. I expect multiple guys to show up, but let's not make any mistake about it. Peyton Thorne's got to be able to steer this ship in year two. He's been in college, it seems like now, for 5 years. He's played a lot of high-level snaps. There's no more waiting on it. You got to go out there and prove it.
Oh, there's no question about that. It's interesting when the players you were mentioning there, I was thinking about this, said something about it the other day. The players that Hugh Freeze was able to flip last year, Connor Liu, Keldrick Falk, Kayan Lee, were guys that were going somewhere else, and they are three very, very important pieces of this of his second team.
Oh, without it, well, now you know why he was trying to flip them so hard. And you know, it kind of, you know, as a fan, as somebody that's, you know, watching it year by year, every new recruiting class, you know, you kind of get a new feel for it, right? You kind of forget some of the stuff that happened maybe a couple recruiting classes ago. Maybe not the guy that signed, but how he was signed, whether it be through a flip in the transfer portal, whether it be through a flip in high school. But I think the track record that you're seeing with Hugh Freeze is they're not just targeting guys because they're guys. They're targeting guys that they really think are effective, and it just reinforces that this staff knows how to evaluate players. And that's why you don't quit on guys, right, that may commit somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And even now, right, you don't want to burn a bridge. And that's not just out of high school, right? That's guys in the transfer portal.
Well, it's more important now, right, with the portal.
No, without a doubt. I mean, it's brought a whole new element. That's why so many of these high-level programs that can afford it are bringing in a lot more recruiting people, because it's a whole other wing of the department. So, yeah, I think it just should – if you're an Auburn fan out there, which obviously you're listening to this, you probably are, I think it should just do nothing but keep reinforcing even more that the staff doesn't just know how to identify. They don't just know how to evaluate. They're smart in the way they go about it, and they don't give up on guys, and it's paying dividends.
Yeah, we were talking earlier in the show about the schedule for 2024 and for Auburn. I mean, look, road games in not to punt on any game on the schedule, Jake, but road games in Athens and Tuscaloosa feel very challenging, not just for Auburn, but for pretty much anybody in college football this year. The swing games on the schedule, and you can argue how many of them there are, but hosting A&M, hosting Oklahoma, going to Missouri, hosting Cal, going to Kentucky. Those are games that decide, did you go 6-6, 7-5, or did you go 10-2 in Hugh Freeze's second year? Is there a game, you know, beyond the Alabama or Georgia games on the schedules, is there a game that really strikes you as, oh yeah, that's an important one? That would be a signifier that things are going in the right direction for Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, well, look, it starts with hold and serve at home, right? And, I mean, you look at Auburn's schedule, I think it's highly probable that Auburn goes undefeated at home this year. You know, and that's not a knock on Mike Elko and A&M. You know, obviously there's no easy schedule in the SEC. You can't take a week off. Texas and Oklahoma are about to find that out. You're not going to have these runs of mediocre teams like you did in the Big 12. I think whether Auburn can get to that 9-win plateau or not is going to come down to what they do at Kentucky or at Missouri. Going to Bama and to Georgia, if we're being honest with each other, obviously I hope Auburn wins those games by 1,000, but it's probably not likely that Auburn goes in there and wins either one of those games. So if you're going to get to that 9-win mark, maybe even possibly that 10-win mark, you hold serve at home, and you've got to, I think, split Missouri and Kentucky on the road, mm-hmm. right? I think those are the two that I'm looking at and saying, okay, if Auburn's going to get to 9, you've got to either beat your granddaddy's Missouri team. This is an unbelievable. We actually have their wide receivers coach coming on the show tomorrow, Jacob Peeler, who's a daggum good coach, and they're really talented with Luther Burden and Brady Cook and some of the weapons that they have coming back. But that at Kentucky game, if Auburn can go beat Kentucky at Kentucky, I think 9-3 is very probable.
And that would be a huge, I mean, we were talking earlier in the show about, like, what's progress. And, I mean, Auburn, it's an incredible stat that Auburn hasn't beaten a major conference team that finished the season with a winning record since Bo Nix beat Ole Miss in year one of the Brian Harsin era. Auburn could go, I mean, 7-5 would be progress, but Auburn could go 7-5 without a win over a quality team, without a win over a team with a winning record. 8-4 or better, and you're probably beating somebody with a pulse in major conference play. And, you know, 9-3, 10-2, unless you know, folks are dropping like flies, hard to imagine Auburn didn't take a step forward on the field if you're finishing with that kind of record.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you look at Auburn's team, when you look at the schedule makeup, I think 7-5 would be a letdown with this schedule. And I think the coaching staff, obviously, they're not thinking that 7-5 is okay. And that's what you want. But at the end of the day, you know, 8-4, anything 8-4 or above, mm-hmm. then you beat somebody with a pulse. But I think that is an acceptable year two. Hey, we're making the progress. We are who we thought we were. We're building. But guys, I'm telling you right now, the more I look at it, right, and You need to build up that confidence early. That's why I think that Cal game at home, and I'm going to say this again, Samuel Jackson, not the actor, this isn't Pulp Fiction, but the guy, there's a reason he went from Cal to Auburn. Auburn watched him, and we see this in basketball all the time. You go drop a 30-piece against somebody on the road, and you're the smaller team, it's amazing how many times those guys end up transferring to the big-time school they dropped that 30 points against. They saw something, and I think that dude's going to have a big effect. But that Cal game is perfect. They're not a monster, but you beat them up. You feel pretty good about yourself. You get the first, what, five games, I believe, at home,
yep.
And you can create a lot of momentum going into a bye week, I believe, and then you play Georgia, then it gets a little heavier at the end. But no, I think 8-4 is the floor for this team.
Yeah, we were talking about it a little earlier, and that's exactly what we were saying. I mean, if Auburn's 5-0 going to Athens, you're feeling really good. If you've lost a couple before you head to Athens, then it's an uphill climb.
If you're 3-2 after Oklahoma, you need to pull up because you're headed towards a mountain, and you got Georgia a week later. Like if you lose to Oklahoma and it's not your first loss of the season, then the season's in trouble. And not to overreact or anything, but the Hugh Freeze era is in trouble if you're starting 3-2 after Oklahoma.
Yeah, and they realize that. And look, the truth is the truth. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, there's an expectation at Auburn. There's a standard. And I will say, one thing about that Oklahoma game, and yes, Jackson Arnold, who started the bowl game last year, he's a phenomenal young guy that Oklahoma has. They should be a little bit better defensively. But there's two things I want Auburn fans to remember about Oklahoma. One, their offensive line is not very good, and I don't see it getting better by game five. Number two, this will be Jackson Arnold's first road game in the SEC. Jordan Hare ought to be lit up, and I don't know if they've released the times. I hope they play that game at 8 o'clock at night.
Well, regardless of what time it is, I mean, Auburn fans, especially if they're 4-0, Auburn fans are going to be pumped about a meeting against Oklahoma, a team that they haven't played in the regular season.
Yeah, and I hope Oklahoma's undefeated. I hope it's a matchup of two undefeated teams. When they come in here, you never know, game day could show up.
That's a cool thought. Hey, I want to get some quick thoughts on basketball. I mean, obviously, Bruce Pearl, we thought a week or so ago that, well, they may be close to going ahead and wrapping up the roster, but a couple of the guys they were targeting have opted to go elsewhere, but they have plan Bs, or, you know, the next man up in line with Jordan Ivy Curry coming in on Thursday, and then the big Samford big man who – We'll give you your turn at pronouncing it. Dan looked it up. Dan looked, and Samford's pronunciation guide calls him a chore. But I've heard
I'm not kidding when I say that I looked up highlights of a chore, and among five different games that I was able to find, I think play-by-play people went with like three different pronunciations over the course of five games. I checked the game notes. A chore is what Samford's calling
him. Double A.
Good enough for me. I mean, look, we were talking about Auburn looking for depth at in the backcourt. This is a huge pickup for whoever gets a chore, including Auburn.
Yeah, I just love how Alabama paid $2 million for Dylan Cardwell with the kid from Rutgers. That's a story for another day. I'm going to go a chore. If I'm going to go with anybody's pronunciation, it's going to be Samford's because that's where he was.
Right.
And I think he's the perfect Bruce Pearl fit for what he does. He's a guy that really runs the floor. He's big. He's long. He can finish at the rim. He gave Kansas a lot of problems.
Oh,
right?
Yes, he
and
did.
You're giving Kansas and Hunter Dickinson a lot of problems. You can play for my team any time of the day. And Bucky Ball, obviously that's something he's going to be used to going up and down. But when it comes to anybody with the last name Curry, I'm good with in basketball.
Hey, like Jordan, anybody. He's got Jordan and Curry in his name. That ain't bad for basketball.
Listen, that's great. I mean, let's just call him Kobe, too, while we're at it. But no, look, at the end of the day, I'm not worried about Bruce Pearl stockpiling talent. That's what he's going to do. And I know Bruce Pearl and the Auburn staff and those players, whether it's Jani Broome coming back, whether it's Dylan coming back, Chad coming back, I mean, Denver coming back, I can go down the list. these guys are hungry and they're upset at the way the year ended, and they should be. And a lot, you know, there's a lot of glow up on Alabama right now, and that's great. But I remember every time I feel like we go through this funk of, oh, Auburn's roster, what are they going to do here? What are they going to do there? Look at the experience coming back on this team. Auburn, in my opinion, should be a top 10 team going into the country, and they're not afraid of anybody. I don't care who Nate Oates signs or what he says. They're not going to close their eyes and get lucky like they did last year and just be given a path to the Final Four. I don't care if Grant Nelson has a mustache or not. That dude disappeared in big moments during the regular season.
Yeah, I think we're entering a year where Auburn and Alabama are going to be the top two teams in the league in the preseason, and that's never happened before. We've never had the top two teams in the SEC.
It is.
Not in the entire country. I would say in the SEC, Auburn and Alabama look like your top two teams in pretty much everyone. That could change, I suppose, with a big marquee pickup at Arkansas or Kentucky. But no, we're in uncharted waters here. Jake, with
sign me up for it. But yeah. Of course, when Auburn gets really good in basketball, Alabama's got to. You know, I think Bruce Pearl did more to help Alabama than anybody besides Auburn.
Oh, they weren't motivated to do anything until Bruce and Auburn started winning more.
Yeah, no, I can't wait to watch that one burn down.
Yeah, hey, you mentioned you've got the Missouri wide receiver coach coming up. Let everybody know what all you've got on tap and how they can, of course, get it. Crane & Company.
Yeah, for sure. Well, look, if you love college sports, sports in general, it's Crane & Company. We're on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CRAIN & Company. We talk to coaches all the time. You know, obviously, we were in it. I was in it for 10 years, six at the Division I level, and we get into the nitty-gritty a little bit, but, you know, we keep it surface level when we have to. It's just a lot of fun. I think it's different than the other sports shows you're going to listen to. So, yeah, come hang out with us.
Great stuff, Jake. We always appreciate it. Right. Have a great week.
You guys as well. See y'all.
Jake Crane. Crane & Company as he joining us as he does each Tuesday afternoon. Hopefully, you caught all that. If you missed any of it, check out the podcast.
Yeah, Podcast of the Drive, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center.
We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. We'll be back to wrap it up here on the Tuesday Drive. For air that's cooling.